Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week.
It's hard to just be alone a lot of the time. I guess it gives you that opportunity to just kind of cut yourself off from everyone. It kind of sparked everything off, which I'd kind of managed to get under control.
34% of young people who have self-harmed in the last 12 months said that their tendency to self-harm has increased as a result of the coronavirus lockdown.
It's just been awful. Like, I've just felt so much worse, and yeah, even now the thought that we're going back to normality is making me think about self-harm again, so yeah.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday. Okay, welcome to Mental Health Monday. We've got a really fascinating conversation today, working with a wonderful organisation that is brilliant, doing brilliant work for Self-Harm Awareness Day, which is the 1st of March. And we're going to speak to various different people on the show this week. And we're going to have conversations, which I think people won't have heard before, but to guide us through that process, various people who will shed a little bit of light on this particular subject. And we're going to start off with Zoe Bailey. Now, Zoe works for The Mix. Now, the website for that is themix.org.uk. Brilliant website, loads of different information and resources on there, but with a particular focus on self-harm. Zoe, welcome to the program. Thanks for speaking to us today.
Hi, Mick. No, pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Often when we bring up subjects like self-harm, other mental health issues that we talk about on the programme, there's always a preconception. There's always people who think, well, I know about self-harm, or I think I know about self-harm. And I think a lot of the conversation we'll have today, Zoe, will challenge some of those preconceptions and look at the realities of self-harm, as opposed to maybe some of the things that people have taken along with them in terms of their journey so far. Just set up for us, if you can, the importance of having a conversation like this.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we at The Mix, we were one of the founders of Self-Harm Awareness Day, which has been running for around, I think this is the 8th year. And the 1st of March is an important day for us because it helps us to raise awareness of self-harm, get some conversations started, and signpost young people that need support and information to The Mix's services or other services that they might be in need of. So we want to really break down the taboo around self-harm. And the only way that we can do that is by being very open about it, by building some research that tells us what what young people are going through, talking to them directly, and being able to build a picture of, I guess, year on year, what the growth or the conversations about self-harm are, who it's impacting and why. And the reason that we are so interested in that at The Mix and have really delved into that over the last year is so that we can push our support services out to more young people. We can make them relevant and we can make them useful. Now, the way that we do that the best is by young people telling us what they want, what they need and when they need it, how they need it, and also by bringing them into conversations with each other, so that the peer support there that can be really, really important as well.
No, absolutely. And we'll be hearing from some of the experiences of young people as part of the conversation today. When we talk about definition of terms, particularly based around self-harm, I think there's one method of self-harm which springs to mind for a lot of people as well. But just going through some of the resources that you've got on The Mix, there's a wide variety of things that people might not instantly consider to be factors to bear in mind when considering whether or not something is self-harm.
Yeah. There are lots of definitions, as you quite rightly point out, of self-harm. The way that we define it is the way that young people choose to define it. And they can include things like cutting or stabbing. They can include self-poisoning, intentional overdosing, burning, scalding, hair pulling, banging heads, banging body parts. And so it really is a variety. What we have found over the years of research is that this can be very different across different demographics as well. Young men, for example, we found in our research a couple of years ago, we saw an increase in over-exercising, in exercising whilst injured, punching walls, those kind of self-harm behaviours that have actually now fallen into the category that we would then define as self-harm and try to support with that and the issues around that.
And it's important to bear those things in mind, because, of course, if you've got new sort of trends emerging, or if trend is the right word, that's something you've got to bear in mind, because if there are behaviours which can have a negative impact on a young person's outcome, that's something that we've got to be absolutely aware of. If we touch on lockdown and the survey that you've worked on, there are many different factors within the survey which we'll touch on as part of the conversation. It's clear, though, from what I've read and from what you've shared so far, that lockdown has had an impact, and actually for self-harmers it's also had an impact, and it's not been a positive one.
Yeah, that's quite right. I mean, what we've seen, and we did actually do obviously a specific piece of research around lockdown in line with continuing our benchmarking about how self-harm behaviours are increasing or decreasing or changing, as you quite rightly put out there, that we've seen actually that 34% of young people who have self-harmed in the last 12 months said that their tendency to self-harm has increased as a result of the coronavirus lockdown. So 34% that's a huge number, saying that this has had a negative effect, an impact on them.
And in terms of that, access to services, of course, if available at all, has certainly changed as well. You've also found that there has been similar numbers, around about 30% who maybe haven't been able to reach those regular services that they would normally reach out to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen actually there's a slight difference in the age groups as well. So the younger age groups and the 16 to 20 year olds, because our survey was between 16 and 25 year olds, the mix supports all young people under 25, but for the purposes of this survey, 16 to 20 year olds are much more likely to self-harm, 52% in the last 12 months, than those who are 21 to 25 years old. And we know that this is as a result of that age group being more likely to be in education rather than being in a work environment. And, you know, what those young people have told us as a result of the survey is that this is the impact on those younger people in education, is because perhaps they feel they haven't reached the end of their education, they're not ready for employment, and therefore what are those opportunities, whereas actually the 21 to 25 year olds who are in employment see themselves as actually having that foot in the door for their future. So that's a really interesting split in the demographic of young people as well, in terms of hopelessness for the future. How is the pandemic going to have impacted on their future potential, their possibilities, their opportunities, their employment, their economic status going forward? So that difference actually in the percentages there is very important for us to take into account when we're providing the support service to those young people.
Can I just recap that figure there? 16 to 20 year old. It's a survey, so it's a snapshot at a time. But you believe that 52% of 16 to 20 year olds are self-harming. That's as a percentage of people across the country.
Yeah.
Most, that we're into the majorities, aren't we, with 52%. Most young people between the ages of 16 and 20 are self-harming. That strikes me as an incredibly high number, an incredibly worrying number.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's hugely impactful when we look at the different ways of self-harm, which we've talked about before, and actually how people are categorising self-harm. But what it means is that the impact of the lockdown has meant that the different issues and situations around us in our environment are more and more intense as well. So therefore the reasons for self-harm are changing and morphing and increasing, not just the ways that young people are self-harming. We also found that for those people who had ever self-harmed before, so that they had ever self-harmed, 38% of those had self-harmed in the last 12 months as well. So that in itself is a massive figure, because we do see self-harm sort of going up and down in terms of what's happening for young people, different times of year. So this last 12 months has just been one big block of, you know, maybe stress, anxiety, worry, And so that has increased so that there's a big 12-month pattern there rather than just the sort of different times of year with an increase in self-harm.
Yeah, and in terms of the conversations that I've been having over the course of the last year, it started out with the people predicting potential issues, it morphed into the sort of the anecdotal evidence, and just in the last few weeks, we've started to see the real evidence, you know, starting to come to the fore. And that's absolutely what you've been able to bring with this survey and this report. Zoe Bailey is with us from The Mix. Can we bring Molly into the conversation? Molly is 17 years of age, and she's going to join us now for Mental Health Monday. Hi, Molly. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for speaking to us. Can I ask you, Molly, how long has self-harm been part of your life?
So I started self-harming in November 2019, so over a year, really, yeah.
And in terms of that, and we've just talked about with Zoe some of the issues that sort of emerged from March onwards with schools closing, opportunities, educational opportunities, work opportunities for a lot of people shutting down. What was your experience during that time?
Just got so much worse. I think part of it is being so isolated, because obviously when you're around people, you can't necessarily, say if you're in school the whole day, you can't hide if you're upset or anything. But when you're at home, you're learning online, people don't know what you're going through. And I think isolation has made me it's just been awful. Like, I've just felt so much worse. And yeah, even now the thought though of going back to normality is making me think about self-harm again. So, yeah.
I mean, it's a really difficult situation that you found yourself in, because I imagine from that November period onwards, if you were looking for help and reaching out for help, that March time and obviously the way your services changed and so on and so forth, mm-hmm. obviously creates a roadblock or a hurdle that would be difficult to overcome as well. But actually, it's still obviously a factor within your life, whether lockdown was here or not.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's made worse as well, because there's a massive backlog now of people waiting to be seen for services. So that made it worse.
Can I ask you about sort of when it comes to self-harm, is it easy to talk about with different people? Have you found it easy to share your story in terms of the people you can speak to who will understand what it is that you're going through?
To be honest, no. I found it quite difficult. Initially, I really didn't understand how I could even begin to voice what I was experiencing, mostly because I didn't understand it myself, and I didn't see it as self-harm at first. So when I finally reached out, I think that was, it helped, but I still think people don't fully understand what it is or how to react. And a big part of that is because of stigma, because the stigma thrives on us being afraid to approach the topic.
How is it that you sort of frame it within your own mind about the reasons that drive yourself to self-harm? What are those sort of factors that you bear in mind?
Well, a reason for me, it's mainly just feeling like really overwhelmed with the future, certainly uncertainty. About careers, university.
Absolutely. Let's bring Soraya into the conversation. Soraya, let's just touch on exams, because of course as a 16-year-old you'll know all about some of the changes that have kicked in, and some people would dream at the time where they didn't have to sit exams and they were just going to make up a mark based on how good you were and how good they knew that you were. But for a lot of people, if you've been told your entire life that your exam results and everything you're doing in school is building up to a certain point, and then suddenly that point disappears or is taken away or the goalposts are changed, I imagine that has a really profound impact.
I mean, I guess for me, the situation was very different because I'd missed a year of school before. So I guess it was quite comforting in a way, knowing that I didn't have to kind of catch up with all the work I'd missed and show it. But I guess at the same time, for me, it meant when I got my grades afterwards, it felt unfair And definitely then comparing it to a lot of other schools, the grades were really mixed. Some schools seriously like overgraded, and my school was quite honest and quite, I know, I think quite harsh with the grading. And I guess also that it felt like a chance to prove myself for the past, what, 5 years of work, and it kind of felt like that had been taken away. But I guess at the same time, it didn't leave that whole, I guess, of stressing the entire lockdown, not knowing like how I'm supposed to do all this work while struggling at home.
And in terms of your own sort of self-harm experience, was that something you were experiencing before lockdown kicked in? And then did lockdown change the way you were thinking about yourself and those opportunities as they come your way or not?
I guess for me, it's been kind of a part of my life for, I guess, the past 4 years. But I think when we went into lockdown, I had been clean for, I think, almost 6 months. And then lockdown kind of messed it up. Because I don't know, I don't think it's hard to just be alone a lot of the time. And I guess it gives you that excuse sometimes that you're looking for of not wanting to go out and socialize. And it gives you that opportunity to just kind of cut yourself off from everyone. And it was just me alone with my thoughts and myself. And it kind of, I don't know, it kind of sparked everything off a bit, which I'd kind of managed to get under control like the few months before.
I think the phrase that's come up many times in conversations like this is the phrase, the four walls, which is exactly, Sarai, what you've just described there, that point where you're sitting around thinking, well, I can't go anywhere, I can't do anything, I can't see anyone. And it's no surprising that we react and we respond and in different ways in regard to that one. Can we touch on stigma as well and conversations that you feel that you've been able to have? Because obviously over a four-year period, I guess your own perceptions around self-harm have changed, that period of, you said, of being clean, of self-harm for 6 months as well. How do you frame it within your own mind now? And how do you perceive those sort of that stigma that comes around the issue of self-harm?
I guess that's something I still kind of struggle with myself. I don't know, I think it's a constant message of not being serious enough. And like, especially in services, and I think it's quite misunderstood and it gets mixed up with the physical and mental sides of it. And like in services, with some of the language used, it can kind of encourage you to kind of get worse physically in terms of like self-harm itself without focusing on why it's happening in the first place. And I guess even myself after 4 years, that's still a judgment I have against myself of it's not as bad as it used to be, therefore it's fine, I don't need to talk to people about it. But it's something that got in the way of me reaching out for support, and even now gets in the way of me talking. And I know it affects a lot of other people reaching out.
And do you think that sort of understanding is easy to introduce? Would that, I don't know if that comes with training or better equipping people that you might have interactions with. Because of course, you know, there are many different things that young people experience and go through and deal with. But also there are plenty of opportunities sometimes through teachers and youth activities and sporting activities for there to be sort of an intervention or an awareness. Is that something which you think you could teach? You could sit down with adults and say, these are the factors you need to look out for. These are the conversations that you can have around self-harm, which don't put the child or young person at risk and actually encourages them to maybe then seek professional help or get in touch with an organisation like The Mix that we've been hearing about.
No, I definitely think it's something that people can kind of learn to talk about. It's definitely difficult. I think people close to me in understanding and learning the stigma a bit, and language that isn't really helpful, have definitely struggled with even talking to me about it. But it's something that can definitely be done, because even though, I guess, from a professional point of view, the physicality of it is going to be the first kind of question, and like making sure that physically you're okay. But I guess sometimes people get stuck on that and don't move on to why is it happening.
Absolutely. And Molly, I was gonna raise this issue next, that people will think it's a physical act, so therefore if you don't do it, all the problems go away. But I guess it's much more complex than that. And it's why we need to be a lot more, I think they call it the holistic approach, in terms of looking at the whole picture, not just on the physical act, even though the physical act might be the thing that somebody spots in the first place that might highlight someone has an issue.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that is a big problem, because we just tend to focus on the immediate risk. For example, if somebody comes up to you and says that they feel suicidal, they feel like they want to self-harm, it's like a panic. We go into panic mode and we want to try and prevent that, which is to be expected. However, when you're feeling so bad, like when, I know for me, when I feel like I need to self-harm, I don't want that. I just want somebody to sit with me in that moment and just listen attentively, and just be there with me, because it's not like, I don't want people around me to panic. That's not helpful at all. So yeah, definitely.
And in regard to that, is that something which, if there was to be more education, more training, more resources available, that actually that's the sort of thing you could talk about, that it doesn't have to be about the physical safety, although that will be a big factor in it, but it's about, well, what is it that young person needs? What is it that young person's looking out for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people need to realise that, to make sure that we properly understand self-harm, we need to understand why it happens and not just sort of try and fix the problem and make sure that the self-harm goes away when the underlying problem is still there. And a big part of that, like, it keeps coming down to stigma. And if we want to talk about this more, language plays a big part in it as well. And I think a lot of times self-harm is portrayed in a negative way, sort of like suicide, because we say we commit suicide, when that's really not helpful. People don't commit suicide like it's a crime. They try suicide. So yeah, I think language and the way we talk about it, that definitely needs to be improved upon. Yeah.
Absolutely. And Soraya, is that something that you'd echo, this idea that sometimes people will presume that by preventing the physical act, you've solved the issue, whereas actually quite clearly there's something deeper that needs to be examined and looked at and dealt with?
No, yeah, definitely. Because I think, I guess, I don't know, I think you hear self-harm and immediately it's, oh no, what's going on? And you don't really look into what's happening, and once it's over, it's like, right, they're not self-harming anymore, it's fine, but they're still struggling with it. I guess for me, other illnesses, like mental illnesses I have, it's kind of similar to self-harm in that if I'm not acting on that behavior, it seems like I am doing okay, whereas there's still a lot more going on that people can't see.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, you know, the word stigma comes around so often in conversations. And actually, if we can get rid of the stigma around a particular issue, particularly around, you know, these such, you know, serious issues, then we can kind of move on in an open and responsible way, instead of almost trying to second guess how everyone's going to respond and everybody's going to reach out. Let's bring Zoe back into the conversation now. Zoe, Soraya and Molly spoke so brilliantly then about their experience, and it's brilliant that you've got them on board with the campaign, because the experience and the lived experience of people is so crucial, isn't it, to telling the truth of these matters and the reality of what self-harm is like.
It is, absolutely. And the more we listen to Molly and Soraya and the many young people that are affected by self-harm, the more we will learn. You know, as stigma is the thing that is preventing us from talking about it, and stigma is the thing that young people are saying that is preventing them from getting support. And so the more that we can have these conversations, the brilliant way that Molly and Soraya are willing to talk from, you know, their own lived experience of that, the more we can all absorb, learn, and make ourselves better and more useful in trying to support that. We know that I think it was 42%, yes, 42% of young people agreed that the stigma around self-harm would discourage them from getting access to the services if they needed it. That can't continue. That's 42% of all of those young people that we talked about earlier who are self-harming, not accessing support, not because they don't need it, not because they don't want it, but because the stigma that is around this issue is so high. And a lot of that is caused by people that don't understand. A lot of that is caused by people that won't listen to Molly and Soraya and are not willing to take on board somebody saying, this is my lived experience of self-harm and this is what I need, and when I need it, we should just listen to that, absorb it, and provide the right support and services at the right time.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that is down to media as well, mate, really, isn't it? I mean, we've got to start opening those conversations up and being very honest, not blame a situation, not blame a young person, but listen, understand, and provide the support that's wanted.
Absolutely. A couple of stats that jumped out for me: 53% didn't speak out because they didn't want their family to worry, which you can understand, but actually that plays into that idea of because they worried how they'd, I guess, respond and wouldn't know which, you know, steps to take. 41% thought that it would not help, which I think again is really telling, that if they, even if I do speak out, no one will understand. Whereas actually, if we had much more awareness training, that you would think, well, if I do speak out, people will understand because I know, because we've got a system in place and we know how that whole thing is going to work. In terms of self-harm, for anyone who's experiencing now, I just wanted to touch on the fact that the stakes are really high on this one, because you've also looked at those who are likely to drink potentially problematically, those who were more likely to take drugs as well, and indeed those who were more likely to experience suicidal thoughts. And down the line, for somebody who's maybe starting out in self-harm, these may well be factors that emerge in their lives further down the track. And I guess that's why it's important to have these conversations now. And if young people do speak out about self-harm, they get the support there and then, because what might come down the line could be increasingly problematic for them.
That's right. And we're not saying anything escalates into something else. It's not, you know, a natural, it's not that the path always goes in that way. No, you know, we would never say that, and that, because that's not accurate. But what we do want to do is look at the coping mechanisms and the ways that each unique individual wants to access those coping mechanisms, and different ways for different people. So that takes quite a lot of hard work for somebody to be able to support that, whether that's family or professional support services. In terms of, you know, the way that we look at self-harm at the Mix, and this is coming from an organisation that is youth-led, you know, for young people, by young people, we know that we're not aiming with this campaign or with anything else to stop self-harm ever happening. That's not something that we're brashly saying, you know, we're going to stop self-harm. We're not saying that. That's not our aim. And what we're saying is provide the right services, break down the stigma, support young people who are self-harming, give coping mechanisms and help them to continue throughout life, whether that's building resilience, whether that's breaking down access to stop people feeling lonely. Whatever those things might be, there could be something that we could support with. And you're right, mate, that could then prevent a cycle or escalation, or, you know, any of the things that possibly could happen with self-harm.
Absolutely. Molly, if there's one thing that you'd hope that people would take away from Self-Harm Awareness Day, what would it be? What would be that message that you'd be keen to share, given your experience and given that conversation we've just had about sort of people knowing more, breaking down the stigma?
I think It's a difficult one because there is a lot. I think just to maybe try and understand it, because I think people say a lot, we're aware of mental health, and we are to an extent, but I don't think we know what to do with that information. And I think if people can learn sort of what the problem really is, and how it's all well and good saying that like we want to break down the stigma, but how we actually do that, you know, that comes down to how we talk about it, how we treat people who struggle with self-harm. Those things all play into how we can break down the stigma. So it is a lot that needs to be done, but yeah, really understanding the problem, that's the first one, I think.
And in terms of the conversation that you've been able to have, Molly, and in terms of getting involved in a campaign like this, are you optimistic about yourself and the future and about how you're going to be able to move forward with your own life?
I am, you know, and I hope that, I know that I'll get to a better place. And I think having the experience has actually made me want to work in the mental health field. So, yeah, I don't know. I have met some good people along the way who have been helpful. So, yeah, it's not all bad.
That's a really positive answer. I like that. Thank you. Sarai, I'm going to bring that same question to you about what you'd like people to take home from Self-Harm Awareness Day. What are those sort of key messages that you'd be keen to get out there?
I guess maybe, like, quite similar to Molly, like, understanding it's not the problem. That's not, I guess that's a cry for help from the problem. And it's a way to kind of, I don't know, I guess in a way sometimes to show people I am struggling. It's a physical, it's something there, something that you can see is proof, I guess, which people shouldn't feel like they have to show. And taking more time to understand that problem and help to understand that issue rather than to fix the self-harm itself, because otherwise you're not going to get anywhere if you just focus on ending self-harm itself. That's not going to fix the issues that come with it.
And are you optimistic about how you might move forward as we sort of come out, well, I'm going to say the end of lockdown. There's various different stages of ends of lockdown, and who knows when they'll actually appear. But are you optimistic about the future?
I think so. I guess a lot of it is based on my experience before lockdown, and I think for me the idea is if I got through that and I've got through this, I can handle. I can learn to handle what kind of comes, and learn to kind of, I don't know, I guess deal with things myself rather than let it take over me, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's a great answer. And actually, Zoe, that's that phrase resilience gets, again, mentioned a lot of times on the program. And sometimes people presume it's that you can brush everything off and dismiss everything and have no issues with your life whatsoever because you're going to, in men's case, man up and brush it off. But actually, Sarai's just touched on something else, that actually it's about learning from your experiences and finding a pathway forward, even when you don't quite know what's going to be on the horizon. And actually, Sarai and Molly are in a much better position for speaking out and speaking openly about their experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, resilience, gosh, you know, you touched on us always learning earlier. I'm still building my resilience, and thank goodness, because, you know, this is a year when it doesn't matter how old you are, you're all in the same boat, and we're all going through the unknown. And, you know, the more that we can support each other and within a peer-to-peer environment for Molly and Sarai, and being able to share their stories and the way that they are still learning, and learning from their peers, learning from support services, learning from, you know, the way that the media is reacting to the situation and the way that the media will react, hopefully, to our Self-Harm Awareness Day campaign, in a positive and open way. You know, we're all becoming better, stronger, learning more resilient as a result of taking those learnings on board.
Absolutely. We'll point people in the direction of the website, themix.org.uk. There's loads of information on there, obviously, for Self-Harm Awareness Day. That's a specific page which people can click on. But I would say that there's loads of other stuff on loads of other topics as well. And actually, if there is anyone who's got a young person in their lives who they want to just find out a little bit more information, check out some resources. The Mix is a really good place to start there. That's themix.org.uk. Thank you so much for your time. Zoe, thank you for speaking to us today. Really appreciate your time. Soraya and Molly, thank you for your time too. We wish you all the best for the future, and thanks for speaking to us on Mental Health Monday.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.